This is the Adam Gold Show.
Luke DeCock from the News and Observer as we complete the newspaper takeover of the program today. Jonas Pope first, C.L. Brown next, Luke DeCock batting third in the lineup. You are the columnist, sir. Thank you very much for your time. Alec and I were talking in the last segment about which sport would you like to write more about? And we were talking about in terms of what we do here, blabbing on the radio. Which sport would you like to write more about if it moved more people to click?
Honestly, I don't really care about the clicks. I mean, my two favorite sports to cover in general are hockey and college basketball, which makes this a pretty good market to be in.
Sure.
I think if you're going to ask me to cover a beat, it probably is hockey, because under normal circumstances, you know, you get more interactions with the players, and it's a very mm-hmm. open sport for the most part, which lends itself to good coverage, and I think has over the years in a lot of places. But I don't think there's anything better than that sort of five-week sequence of the ACC tournament and NCAA tournament, and the access you get during those periods of time with open locker rooms, mm-hmm. with the courtside seating, lends itself to amazing coverage, and that's why you always get the best college basketball stories in March. So it would be those two. If I had to pick one, I probably would say I'd rather, you know, cover the ACC and NCAA tournaments and take the other 47 weeks off. either one of those is great for me. And the good news is, in this market, they tend to drive a lot of traffic. So yeah. It's a pretty good synergy there.
No question. Man, I long for the days where you could actually, you know, go into a locker room and establish a relationship with a player. And I'm not even talking about off-the-record conversations. And you've had them, and I've had them with people. But it's just a different level of coverage that you get, and you can get more out of on the record conversations when you just have casual, relationships with these guys. I don't know that that's ever coming back, to be perfectly honest. I think once we've gotten out of the locker rooms, I don't know if we're ever going to get back in.
I think it will happen in hockey because there is a culture of that. And I think, you know, the players understand now, maybe even more than before, although many of them already did, that it's a mutually beneficial symbiotic relationship, especially with people who are around every day, which as a columnist, I'm not anymore, but for 8 years I was. You get to know them as people. You get to know their families. They get to know you, and that when things get tense, when things get ugly, you have that relationship to fall back on. It's not, you don't make friends necessarily, but you can develop a mutual respect, whether it's through your work ethic or your attendance, and they know you're there every day, and they know that you're putting the effort in the same way they are, just in each of your different professions. And those things all matter in good times and bad. And, you know, I look back at some of the teams that I covered, you know, this is now 13, 14 years later. There are still guys on those teams who, you know, if I pick up the phone and give them a call, like the story I did in 2020 about the equipment manager mm-hmm. and skate blades, they'll call back and talk for a long time because we've built that relationship over a period of years and a period, quite frankly, of seasons. You know, that 82 games is a long time. And when you're on the road and you're there every day, that becomes your peer group, you know, whether you like it or they like it or not. That's part of it.
Luke DeCock of the News and Observer, at Luke DeCock on Twitter, joining us here on the Adam Gold Show. We're talking a little bit about hockey. Let's just stay there. Rangers in town. Somebody will invariably ask if it felt like a playoff atmosphere. It's a regular season game. I don't buy into the playoff atmosphere because there's no finality to it. We're not going up one game to none or falling down one game to none. But this is a great test for Carolina, who has played so few games, especially in the East, against the other top teams. They have played the best in the Atlantic more than they played the best in the Metro. Still haven't played Pittsburgh. This will be the first game against the Rangers. Only one against Washington. What's your take on, you know, this matchup tonight?
I think it's important for the same reason that the last game against Boston was important, that as you become a contender and as you sort of want to establish your dominance, whether it's in the division or the Eastern Conference, that these regular season games do matter. I know, Adam, you and I both know that game against Boston back at the beginning of the season, I think it was the sixth of the nine straight wins, that mattered because the Hurricanes have to find a way to get rid of that sort of mojo that the Bruins had against him. And you don't look at this week and say that they haven't now. I mean, obviously they have now that all the rubber meets the road in the playoffs, obviously, but it's a completely different dynamic now than it was. And, you know, Brad Marchand isn't dumb. He's not going to beast down. You know, he sees the Hurricanes as a team where he wants to try to get in their head now. That's a different dynamic. And not because he's dominant, but because they're a threat. And they are. And quite frankly, what tonight's game means is if the Hurricanes want to go into the playoffs with the kind of mojo that the Bruins had against them, they need to set themselves out as the alpha dog in this division. There's no reason they can't. They're more than capable. But that's a mentality. That's part of the transition from making the playoffs to winning in the playoffs. It's part of the transition from being a team that thinks it can contend to being a team that believes it's a contender. And you've seen that with Tampa. You've seen that with the Bruins. Now you're starting to see it with the Hurricanes. I think tonight is a big part of that. And you know, the Florida Panthers are going to have to go through the same thing this year to legitimize themselves. I honestly think, despite their records, the Hurricanes are farther down that road. But tonight's another example to sort of put your stamp on it, put your foot down. And yes, it is just a regular season game. But these things in the aggregate do end up mattering, I think, if you end up playing this team again.
Luke Tkach is with us. My take on Brad Marchand lashing back at the Hurricanes' social media contingent is that he doesn't believe the Hurricanes are a threat. I think he believes that the Boston Bruins aren't nearly as good. I think he, to me, you lash out if you think that, like, you're that. To me, that's a desperation move. That's a I think Carolina proved that they were better.
Yeah. Absolutely. That dynamic has changed, though, and changed dramatically.
Yep.
And for, you know, Marchand's actions demonstrate that.
I mean, he was largely not invisible, but their top players were, other than the power play, their top players were not threatening at all against Carolina. Carolina was just obviously better. Boston wasn't very good. And I don't even blame Tuukka Rask for that. Rask just, I don't know that he had a chance on any of the five goals in the first period. Maybe he gives up a juicy rebound on the second one, and maybe he could have had Jarvis's. But man, all five goals happened from basically, you know, within 5 feet of the net.
Yeah, it's just the better team asserting itself, which is how those two franchises have to look at each other now.
Well, let me ask you about the Tar Heels. We just talked to C.L. Brown. Like, I think my view of them and other people's view of them is the difference between tangible and intangible. I don't think Carolina's problems are really intangible. I think there are tangible problems with them in that I don't think they're great offensively in terms of being athletic. I don't think they're very good defensively. And they can shoot it, though. And as a great shooting team, they'll always have a chance. But I'm just not a fan of the makeup of that group, having watched them now for the better part of 3 months.
Yeah, I the phrase that I've used is that UNC has chemistry issues. And I don't necessarily mean that the players don't like each other or anything like that. I just don't think that the pieces fit together that well. You've got kind of too many players that are trying to do the same thing. There's only one ball. There aren't enough shots to go around. And that there's just sort of, I don't want to say lack of identity because that's such a cliche, but you've just got too many square pegs you're trying to fit into round holes, especially on offense. You know, you've got two ball dominating shooters who want the ball in their hands and don't necessarily excel at distributing it. And then you've got a couple, you know, big men who range outside. You've got one guy who just doesn't score, but does a lot of other things well. And then you've got a big man who you should be feeding, but it seems like most of Bacot's offense seems to come on offensive rebounds and loose balls and things. Like, it just, the parts don't fit together. And I really don't want to get in the habit of comparing Hubert to Roy and all of that, because it's unfair and it's not right. But Roy's teams would almost always, at least the good ones always would, had that point guard who could distribute and move the ball around and bring guys into the game. And players seem to know their role. I don't get the sense that anyone in this offense is that the roles that these players think they have don't seem to add up to 100%. Probably adds up to about 120%, and that's where you start having problems. But by the same token, I think there's absolutely effort and investment issues. You can see that sometimes this team, the light is on, and sometimes it's off. And I don't know whether it's motivated to play big games at home like Michigan and Virginia, and they think of going down to Coral Gables and playing in an empty building against Miami, a football school, and don't take it seriously or what. But I do know that Roy had the exact same problem reaching almost this same group of players to the point where he quit or retired, and Hubert hasn't had any more success. I don't necessarily blame Hubert for that. I just think it's a group and a mix of players that's difficult to motivate.
Yeah, I think they need a little bit more dynamic play away from the basket. It hurts them sometimes where Leaky Black is really just a defender. He's just a shutdown guy, but he's not doesn't really contribute offensively. They need more weapons on the court, but they can shoot it. So if they get caught, like if they were Loyola of Chicago, they'd be awesome. But they're not Loyola of Chicago. So it's a little bit more difficult. Final thing for Luke Dukak of the News and Observer. This is away from basketball. Thoughts on Gene Chizik's return to Chapel Hill? It seems like he was just here.
Yeah. And it seems like it was just another dramatically embarrassing defensive performance that he had to come in and clean up the mess. It wasn't that long ago. But he did. And he knows the university, and obviously it's a different head coach, but he knows the university. He knows the ground. He knows the foundation. He's pretty much proven at this over the years. I have very little doubt that North Carolina's defense will be better next season with Gene Chizik running things than it was this season, only because, one, we know he can do it, and two, he's done it before. There's every reason to believe that. It kind of reminds me when Mac came in, there are all these, before he even got the job, amid the flood of rumors that were out there, there was one that he was bringing in this dream team of Gene Chizik and Cliff Kingsbury.
Right.
And it's amusing now to have Chizik here and kind of be the savior, quite frankly, to kind of get this program that has so much potential and obviously has had tremendous success on the recruiting trail, but is coming off a very disappointing underachieving season. Gene Chizik is basically charged with getting everything back on the tracks here. I think when you look at their returning personnel and Gene Chizik's resume, that you can expect North Carolina to be better on the defensive side of the ball next year. Unfortunately, they also have to break in a new quarterback, which is going to be interesting as well.
Being better defensively is a low bar. But who knows? Maybe Cliff Kingsbury will also be available.
It's possible, I guess. Maybe still a year away.
I don't know, man. His teams have gotten worse over the year everywhere. You go back to Texas Tech, look at Cliff Kingsbury's first half of the season record set versus second half of the season record. Which is, I guess, understandable because you have a lot of at Texas Tech, you probably had a lot of cream puff early season matchups and some of the tougher conference games are at the end. But it's dramatic how different his teams have looked. And in the NFL, it's the same. They're basically, they win 2/3 of the time in the first half of the year and lose more than 2/3 of the time in the second half of the year. 3 years in a row in Arizona.
Yeah, I think we can safely burn that bridge when we come to it, though. I'm not sure we're there yet.
All right. Luke, you're the best, man. We'll talk to you next week. Appreciate it. I will not see you tonight. You going to the game?
I will be at the game tonight, yeah.
Yeah, I'm still covering from my home in Canada.
Well, I know you've got a lot of work to do in the barn, I don't want to keep you on the phone.
I have to muck a stall. All right, man, I'll talk to you later.
All right, talk to you, AG.
Peace.
You're listening to The Adam Gold Show on the North Carolina Sports Network.